costs a fraction of a contended divorce and can be done within weeks rather than months or years. An award-winning documentary called Divorce Collaborative Style explains how you can end your marriage fairly and efficiently. For less than what a lawyer charges to answer one simple question, you can get all the answers from Divorce Collaborative Style. Go to collaborativedivorce.tv and order your DVD today. If it's over, end it right. collaborativedivorce.tv.
The American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists is warning pregnant women to stay away from the antidepressant drug Paxil because of the risk of birth defects. NASA has given the green light to the planned launch next week of the Space Shuttle Discovery, the first nighttime launch in 4 years. Scheduled liftoff will be at 9:36 p.m. Eastern Time on December 7th. A dire prediction from Walmart that its December same-store sales will be up no more than 1%. This follows an earlier announcement that for the first time in decades, its November sales were down. On the other hand, both Target and Federated are reporting better than expected November sales. Bankrupt Delta Airlines is reporting a net $64 million loss for October. The company also says that as of October 31st, about $84 billion in claims have been filed against it in bankruptcy court. More trouble for Hewlett-Packard. A lawsuit by shareholders over the boardroom spy scandal has now been amended to include allegations of insider trading. The amended suit alleges that HP executives have sold millions of dollars in stock just before the scandal broke in early September. Gold is trading up almost $11 an ounce at this hour at $652.50. Silver's at $14.16, and light sweet crude up 72 cents a barrel, trading at $63.18. All the markets are down on Wall Street. The Dow is off 41 points at 12,185. NASDAQ is down 3 at 2429, and the S&P 500 is down 1 at 1398. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Diana Walter. It's now 5 past the hour.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I did a show a couple weeks ago on my television show about the tactics used by Hamas, which is, after all, the duly elected government of the Palestinian Arabs, but the tactics used by Hamas in establishing its grievances. Things like putting bombs under children's stretchers and ambulances, and also hiding bombs in mosques, and using women as human shields, children too, to try to block people who had murdered Israelis, to protect them, and it literally using the children as shields. And I condemned this, and I kind of thought it'd be a fairly easy thing for us all to condemn. To my surprise, I got back from some of you. I got a lot of support, by the way, by many of you, but most of you didn't post on the blog. The people who post on the blog tended to disagree. And they said things like, well, Israel is illegally occupying Palestinian land, which I found interesting. Illegally occupying Palestinian land. Well, what makes it illegal, and what makes it Palestinian? And who are the Palestinians anyway? About 6 months ago, I did a show on the history of the land of Israel, and I'll try not to repeat all that history here. But really, the question comes down to who should control Judea. Judea is a very tiny patch of territory, really just the southern half of the West Bank. It's the traditional homeland of the Jews. Jew, of course, comes from Judea. You may not know that. Did you know that? Jew does not come from someone who believes in Judaism. The religion of the Jews is, in fact, newer than the state of the Jews. The Jews were named after the tribe of Judah. They were the only tribe to withstand the Assyrian conquerings. At one time, yes, under the King David, there was land from El Arish in the Sinai, well up into Syria, and both sides of the Jordan River. But after Assyrian conquerings, the tribe of Judah just contained that small area, Jerusalem, Bethlehem, and Hebron. Of course, Jerusalem is to Jews much as Rome is to Catholics or Mecca is to Muslims. It is the holiest place, and indeed it's mentioned in all the Jewish ritual. Next year in Jerusalem, if I forget thee, O Jerusalem, may my right hand lose its cunning, etc. Anyway, but Judea was conquered by the Babylonians. They gave it back to the Jews. Then it was conquered by the Romans. Perhaps the Romans, having conquered Judea, maybe they should control the West Bank. But, of course, the Romans were conquered, I guess, by the barbarians for a while, and then the Arabs came from Arabia, and they conquered the land of Israel. They conquered Judea. The Romans, by the way, had renamed the land Palestine. They wanted, there was a particularly vicious uprising by the Jews against Roman occupation, and they didn't want it to have the Jewish name Judea, so they called it Palestine after the Philistines, who'd lived there 1,000 years earlier. They actually hadn't lived in Judea. The Philistines never did. They lived in the area that's Gaza today. In any case, the Romans conquered it, the Arabs conquered it, then the Christians, the Crusaders, conquered it. Maybe they should control the territory. Then the Mamluks conquered it. And then the last real long-term group to control the land, of course, were the Ottoman Turks. They controlled what is Judea or Palestine from the 1500s well into World War I. They also controlled countries that are today Greece, Bulgaria, Romania, Saudi Arabia, Syria, Lebanon, Iraq. Maybe the Turks controlled the land. Well, in 1917, the League of Nations, actually, I guess it'd be 1918, the League of Nations was formed right after World War I. Britain and France and the United States conquered or won or beat Turkey and Germany and Austria. They took over the Ottoman territories. By the way, a number of peoples had revolted against the Turks earlier, the Greeks, the Bulgarians, the Hungarians. The Arabs revolted, the Jews revolted. Each wanted their own land. And today, no one seems to dispute that Greece has a right to exist, or Bulgaria has a right to exist, or Romania has a right to exist, or Arabia, for that matter, named after the Saudi tribe that conquered it in a coup, that Saudi Arabia has a right to exist. But the League of Nations was formed, and the League of Nations, which was the first international body, predated the United Nations, decided to set aside Palestine for the Jews. Palestine, according to the League of Nations, was what is today Israel, the West Bank, and Gaza, and Jordan, and the Golan Heights. And this would be set aside for the Jews, and territories about 100 times as large would be set aside for the Arabs. And indeed, Arabs signed on to that. You could argue that that was the last international law to which everybody signed on. Of course, it didn't work out that way. Britain controlled the state of Palestine. It was then cut into two pieces, about three-quarters, actually about more like four-fifths. 80% of the land was given to the Arabs, 20% of the land was given to the Jews. The 80% of the land given to the Arabs was given across the Jordan River. It's called Transjordan, meaning across the Jordan River. It included a lot of biblical territories, but the Jews gave it up and decided to focus on west of the Jordan River. Then you may know Britain didn't allow Jewish immigration. They allowed lots of Arab immigration. The Arabs proceeded to do things like take the Jewish community of Hebron, which had existed for 4,000 years until 1929, line up its inhabitants and massacre it. Not really surprising, given that the Arabs were very much in league with the Nazis and very much supported the Final Solution, otherwise known as the Holocaust. But it didn't succeed. They tried to. Didn't succeed. Britain didn't allow a lot of Jewish immigration. But they allowed lots of Arab immigration, and in fact, after the Jews had drained the swamps and made Palestine a place that was considered desolate by Mark Twain in the 1870s into really a land of much richer land, you had millions of Arabs, well, hundreds of thousands, move in at the time. But the heart of what happened, of course, is that in 1938-39, the Jews were being massacred by Europeans in the Holocaust and tried to escape to Palestine. The Brits, of course, turned them back to the death camps, to the gas chambers, and only a few could get in. But at one point, in fact, the Jews were so desperate that they decided to take a tiny strip of land. It was called the Peel Plan. It was a piece of land smaller than Rhode Island, just on the northwest coast of what is today Israel. But the Arabs rejected that, and so the Jews continued to die in the Holocaust. Then, of course, came the 1947 UN partition plan. That would have split what was Palestine into two pieces. The Arabs rejected that, invaded, and thus formed the State of Israel. At that time, there were lands that were left over to be Palestinian areas. Again, even Palestinian is kind of a strange word. After all, who are the Palestinians? The Palestine Post, which became the Jerusalem Post, was the Jewish newspaper. Really, there were no Arabs that called themselves Palestinians until 1964 with the creation of the Palestine Liberation Organization. I know I'm giving you a lot of history here, but there are people who claim this is illegal occupation of Palestinian land, so, you know, we have to get out the history. So let's see. We've got from 48 to 67, Jordan was Transjordan, invaded. and took over the land that was supposed to be allotted to the Palestinian Arabs. But hey, Jordan, Eastern Jordan, was Palestinian anyway. So they took it. Egypt took over Gaza. They put Palestinians in camps, refugee camps, refused to allow them to become citizens. At the same time, when 800,000 Jews were expelled from Arab countries, they didn't get any compensation either. Israel took them in and made them part of Israel. Jordan refused. Egypt refused. Syria refused. So when did the left become so anti-Israel? Well, the Soviet Union was a big supporter of Israel early on when they were fighting the Empire of the Turks. But then, of course, the Jews, the people of Israel, decided to ally with the United States. That made Stalin angry. And, of course, the Soviet Union and Marxists and leftists have been anti-Israel ever since. What's the answer? Who owns the West Bank? Well, you know, go back to the League of Nations, you could say Israel owns it. If you go back to the United Nations, the answer is no one accepted that plan. No one accepted the Jordanian annexation or the Egyptian annexation. I guess the last legal property holder was Britain. Maybe it belongs to London. The answer, of course, is that it belongs to no one. The answer is it's disputed territory. It's been disputed territory, and it can only be undisputed at the product of negotiations. There are Jewish settlements there. There are Arab settlements there. There is empty land there. Israel has offered again and again and again and again to give more than 90% of the West Bank and 100% of Gaza to the Palestinians if they would only renounce violence and recognize the right of Israel to exist. The Palestinians have consistently refused. Prime Minister Olmert just today announced that even though rockets were continuing to fall into Israel, Israel would not fight back. A decision, by the way, which I think is wrong. I don't think any nation should accept rockets going in and not fight back. He announced that even though the Palestinians had kidnapped an Israeli soldier, he would free hundreds of Palestinian prisoners. He was pushed to do this by George Bush, by the way. Thanks, George. He would free hundreds of Palestinian prisoners to release this one Israeli soldier. Now, here's the thing. Either those Palestinian prisoners were unjustly imprisoned, in which case they need to take their case to the Israeli Supreme Court and just like anyone in jail in a democratic country, get free. Or they were justly imprisoned, convicts and murderers, and they shouldn't be freed. All that does is encourage people to take more prisoners. But he said he'd release these Palestinian prisoners, he'd reduce controls on the movement of people and goods in Gaza, a full reopening of negotiations to create a Palestinian state with territorial contiguity in Gaza and the West Bank. Barak, in fact, at one point even offered to have a causeway over Israeli territory between Gaza and the West Bank to allow free movement of goods. So far, the Palestinian response has been to bring in heavy weapons via tunnels, via Egypt, preparing for the long assault on Israel. So who's right? Who's wrong in this conflict? Let me suggest to you that the way to approach the problem is partly to look at people's tactics. When you go out and you kill children, and I'm talking about the Arab children, when the Palestinian mothers strap bombs on their children and send them out to kill Israeli children, they're not helping the situation. Why can't Palestinians accept 97% of a loaf or 90% of a loaf? Why can't they accept a state? Why are they so determined to destroy the state of Israel instead of accepting peace and security and a good life? I've never understood that question, but to help understand it, I've invited some of my critics, people like you who have written on the blog, who actually believe, I guess, that Israel doesn't have a right to exist. It's not quite clear sometimes what those that are anti-Israel believe in. Let me make clear, you have every right to criticize the tactics of the Israeli government or any other government. But when you challenge the right of Israel to exist, I would ask, what other governments do you challenge the right to exist? What about the United States? Is this our territory? Maybe all of us who are descendants of European immigrants or Asian immigrants need to go back to our countries. After all, the Native Americans were here first. So I'd like to make a distinction between either criticizing an Israeli tactic or criticizing the right of Israel to exist. I don't think that saying that a country should not exist and, in fact, supporting a second Holocaust is, I don't know, it's really much up for discussion. I do want to bring you in, though, to again, agree, disagree, bring it on. 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights meet your most complex needs by providing productivity, competitiveness, reliability, accuracy, safety, leadership, and professionalism. Millwrights from the United Brotherhood of Carpenters are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competence and training. The UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business, anytime and every time. The Head On Radio Network is proud to be sponsored by these wonderful men and women who are building the American dream every day. Thank you from the Head On Radio Network.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected, would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow. Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid.
When somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number 1? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network. Do you know what you want?
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I now have on the line a frequent listener to the Inside Scoop who is very critical of my show on Israel and the Palestinians a couple weeks ago. His name is Joe Singh. Mr. Singh, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hello, Mark.
Let me ask you, did you read about Prime Minister Olmert's offer that came out today or yesterday, and what do you think about it?
Well, I did not really read it, so I cannot comment on it.
I'll just briefly tell you what it says in today's Washington Post. It says that he will continue to cease fire even though rockets continue to fall in Israel. He'll release a number of numerous, quote-unquote, Palestinian prisoners. He'll reduce the controls on the movement of people and goods in Gaza and the West Bank. Full reopening of negotiations to create a Palestinian state that they would lead to an independent and viable Palestinian state with territorial contiguity in Gaza and the West Bank. He asked that the Palestinians release Corporal Gilad Shalit, renounce violence, and recognize the State of Israel. Do you think that's a positive step?
I think, yes, it is a positive step. But I think that this is about talking about the the Hamas's terrorism is a little misleading. Because if you look at...
Calling Hamas a terrorist is misleading?
No, I'm saying right now when all the rhetoric about how Hamas is a terrorist organization and how it just is involved in these terrorist attacks, it's a little misleading.
Do you think Hamas is not a terrorist organization?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, talking about recently, if you look at the history, if you look at right, say, let's go back to, say, early 2005, okay? You probably forgot to mention, or you probably don't know, I'm not sure, that the Hamas had largely maintained a ceasefire since early 2005. And even as Israel and Western governments were demanding Hamas to renounce violence and recognize Israel, and Western media, you know, repeat simplistically that Hamas is committed to destruction of Israel, while in the meantime, Israel is actually destroying the Palestinian people.
And well, let me go back here, just because you bring up two separate things.
Heightened violence and land seizures. I mean, but the world has talked about Israeli action.
Let me unpack what you've said, because there are a number of things you've said here. One, you said that Hamas is, I think you said Hamas is not committed to the destruction of Israel. Are you saying that? Because Hamas will tell you very clearly they are committed to the destruction of Israel. Are we not to believe them when they say that?
Well, I think... it can be very illuminating to actually see what Hamas said, the statements, the official statements which Hamas gave after Hamas came to power. You know, Hamas has proposed a ceasefire right after it came to power. It proposed a permanent ceasefire during the negotiation for a two-state settlement. But, you know, but that's not enough. That's not enough.
Let me ask you this. Do you yourself support Israel's right to exist?
Of course. Every country has a right to exist. There is
okay, no, I'm glad to hear that. No, I just didn't know, because I think you will find that Hamas would say Israel has no right to exist. And it's very hard to negotiate with a group that says you have no right to exist. But that's why one of Olmert's demands, and it's really not much, is to renounce violence and, yes, recognize Israel's right to exist.
No, these are interesting conditions. If you look at this condition, without you have to, you know, you have to ignore what Hamas has been saying about, you know, maintaining a ceasefire and going ahead, posing for a negotiation for a two-state settlement. But that's just ignored. What is only eliminated in Western media is these three very really strange conditions, actually, as far as I'm concerned, recognizing Israel, renounce violence, accept prior agreements. These are the three conditions. But if we had really a real free media, shouldn't they be asking, do U.S. and Israel recognize Palestine? Do they renounce violence?
Sure.
It's a joke.
Well, look at Camp David. Look at Tava. Look at 1948. Look at 1967. Look at, I mean, you can look at any period of time in Israeli history. Israel has repeatedly offered to have a Palestinian state. They've repeatedly offered as Olmert did today, as they did at Camp David, as they did at Tava. They said, you know, we have to negotiate some boundaries. But, you know, Israel unilaterally withdrew from Gaza. And instead, Gaza attacked Israel. And what I find strange is the people who argue, I mean, Lebanon's an even clearer example. When Lebanon violated an international boundary, kidnapped Israeli soldiers, killed a number of them, there were people that said, Israel, don't fight back. Don't fight back. Don't defend yourself. I found that very strange, because I don't think people say that to other countries.
Let's talk about Hezbollah later on. Let's first talk about what you just said about Camp David. Let's talk about Camp David. Since the beginning of Al-Aqsa, Intifada, much blame has been placed on Arafat for ending of the peace talks in 2000 at Camp David, right?
Right. Bill Clinton, in fact, was very clear that it was entirely Arafat's fault that there's not a Palestinian state today.
I know. That's what is being, you know, propagated all over. But
Bill Clinton said it. Dennis Ross said it.
Let me finish it. What he actually did was he actually refused to give Israel 27% of the West Bank, which is...
Well, that's not true.
with the rest.
Well, I mean, hold on.
Let me finish it. No.
Have you seen the map?
With the rest of the fractured into multiple pieces. No,
but that's just not true.
Let me complete, and you can respond.
Okay. All right.
With the rest fractured into multiple pieces in exchange for Israel's promise that that in 10 to 25 years, Israel would eventually give 90% of the West Bank to Palestinian Authority. Now, 94% excluding Greater Jerusalem. Now, if the former, the former Israeli foreign minister, Shlomo Ben-Ami, who was a leading member of the Israeli negotiating team, said after the Camp David negotiations, now his words, he said, if I were a Palestinian, I would have rejected Camp David. Now,
well, then he's wrong. And the reason he's wrong, and I don't know that he said that, but all you have to do is look at the maps. I posted some of them on the website. These maps, by the way, did not come from Israel. They don't even come from Bill Clinton, though I posted Bill Clinton's maps as well. They come from the Palestinian Liberation Organization. They come from Orient House, which is Arafat's PLO organization, and they show a contiguous West Bank. They claim 94%. Clinton claims 97%. You can quibble. Maybe it's only 90%. But, you know, when you have a people that claims to want a state, that claims they're being repressed, that claims they want to have independence, I think 90% of a loaf is pretty good. And, of course, Arafat didn't give a counteroffer. He just said no, no deal, no deal at all, and ended it all. And I just don't understand why the Palestinians who claim to be victims and claim to be suffering and claim to want an independent state would give up an offer for 90% of the West Bank and Gaza to get what? To kill more Israeli children? What is their goal if not to have a Palestinian state?
As we discussed earlier, I think, on your blog, that this 90% is a little misleading because of these. If you look at the map, I'm talking about Camp David, the one you probably are talking about, Taba negotiations, which actually...
Well, Taba was subsequent to Camp David. It was a couple months later, but 3 months later. It's the same period of negotiation.
No, the same period, but I agree. What most of the Western commentators fail to add is, that these talks actually continued at Taba Summit in Egypt in January 2001. After
right.
Clinton himself, I don't know if you remember that Clinton himself recognized that there was no way that Palestinians could accept these fragmented pieces of land.
Well, it wasn't fragmented. No, I mean, please, it was always contiguous. Now, Gaza and West Bank are different.
They were virtually separated three cantons. So
that's just not true. You've seen the maps, haven't you, Mr. Singh? Have you seen the maps?
That's correct. I have seen it. But I think
then you can't claim that they were three cantons when they're all connected, right?
Well, if they're connected through roads, that's not contiguous territory.
No, contiguous means they're connected. I mean, I don't know how you say they're connected. It wasn't like there were three separate areas with roads in between them. There was land there. Jericho was there. I mean, I just don't. Sometimes you can argue, and it's like you don't even know what you're arguing about. I invite all my listeners to look at the maps themselves. I put them on my website. I'll put them again. Look at the maps from the Orient House. And the reason I choose the Orient House is because this is the Palestinian Authority's official propaganda organ. Okay, this is not Israel. This isn't even Bill Clinton, who gives a very generous map. This is the Palestinians themselves admit it's contiguous. So I don't understand why you, Mr. Singh, and others continue to claim that it wasn't when it was. I just don't get that.
I think there's a confusion here because on the Camp David maps are a little different from what was accepted, not accepted, but sort of negotiated at Taba. Now, at these talks, both sides came the nearest to agreement than at any time in the entire history of the occupation. Now, however,
right.
at Taba. So I probably right. think that those are the maps you probably are talking about.
Yes, those are the maps I'm talking about. That's true.
That's correct. I agree with you there, but those are different from Camp David negotiations. Okay? So these at Taba, I agree.
Why didn't they take the offer at Taba?
Again, the Israeli Prime Minister Barak pulled out of the peace talks to begin campaigning for the Israeli elections.
Why didn't Arafat publicly say, I will accept this offer or I will give a counteroffer?
No, okay. Israel Arafat, Arafat sensed that Taba may have been his last chance to negotiate a peace deal. Now, he he actually called for Barack to come back to the table. Barack didn't pay any attention to Arafat's offer and went on to lose the Israeli elections to the Likud leader, Ariel Sharon. No, that's the real story of the Camp David Futaba. Unofficially, these talks continued, which led to the Geneva Accords of 2002, now, which was welcomed by all the Arab states and the PLO and everybody. But Israel rejected it, and the U.S. just ignored it. Didn't even
say anything. Here's the heart of it, though. I mean, look, we can disagree on this boundary or that boundary. I mean, 94%, 97%, 92%, you know, there's room for disagreement. What I don't understand is this. The Palestinians, instead of saying, all right, you know, either we'll take this or we'll come close to it or we'll give you a counteroffer, instead voted for a government that had said, we don't want an offer. We want to destroy the state of Israel. And they strap bombs on children and send them to soldiers. They put bombs in ambulances. They rain missiles on Israeli cities. They kidnap Israeli soldiers. Do they really think they're going to earn goodwill and a state by this murderous campaign? I don't get it.
I think you probably don't get it because you continue to ignore that what Hamas said after it came to power, even though it... For 16 months, Hamas did not commit a one single act of terrorism. But that doesn't matter to you guys, I guess. I don't know. But let's talk about the scale of terrorism.
Sure they did. No, wait. I don't know which 16 months you're talking about, but I do know that until Israel built the security fence, there were regular attacks every day. And then they built the fence, and yeah, it made it harder to do attacks, no question about it.
But we are talking about Hamas. Hamas from early 2005 till 2006.
But don't you see that if one Palestinian organization says we won't do attacks, and then other Palestinian organizations continue to do murderous attacks, how can Israel negotiate with any Palestinian organization as long as its citizens are under a constant reign of terror? It seems to me that they have to stop the violence first.
I was talking about the Hamas, which was voted in a democratic election.
Right.
That Hamas organization was no longer involved in any act of terrorism. So there you have. These are valid.
Yeah, but Hamas has said things like this. They've said we need
these representatives who are there to negotiate, but Israel refuses to negotiate. And
should any state negotiate with an organization that won't let it exist? I mean, Hamas has said we need a ceasefire so that they used to call it West Bank and Gaza first. We get West Bank and Gaza and then we conquer the rest of Israel. Should Israel negotiate with an organization dedicated to destroying it?
I'm saying it doesn't matter whether Hamas, as soon as it came to power, it proposed a ceasefire and it said, okay, let's go on with the negotiations. And there will be complete ceasefire. Let's go for two-state settlement negotiation. So, but that, I guess, doesn't matter. But look,
I don't think it does. Because if someone says to me, you know, I won't kill you now, I'll kill you later. Let's sit down and talk. I'll say, you know what? So how about being committed that we can both live two together in peace?
It doesn't matter whether they stop killing you or they.
But they didn't
stop killing you. But we're just not going to talk.
See, I don't think that Israel should accept this sort of good cop, bad cop stuff where they say they're going to stop and then sometimes stop and then other organizations continue the murder and then others continue. Look, it's very clear that the Palestinians elected a government that says Israel has no right to exist. And until they're willing to sit down and say, Israel, you can exist, you can have another Palestinian state in the area, and people can sit down and talk, I don't see why Israel should talk at all, really.
Oh, so even though U.S. Israel doesn't recognize Palestine, it doesn't matter. Even though U.S. and Israel not renounce violence, it doesn't matter, you know.
Both the United States and Israel
are for the weak.
Both the United States and Israel have, for at least a decade now, supported another Palestinian state in the region.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about international consensus? It has been outrightly been rejected for almost 30 years now. But I was trying to address your other point of Israel-Palestine terrorism problem. Let's look at the record. I mean, it's very important to let's keep all the rhetoric and let's look at the actual record.
Okay. One group tries to kill civilians and one group tries not to kill civilians. I see a difference there.
Okay, let's look at the record. Palestinians, okay, who are all subjected to Israeli military occupation and overwhelming violence, have been killed at the rate of 26 Palestinians for every Israeli killed since Hamas took power in March 2006. And 76 Palestinians...
Sometimes by their own bombs, in fact.
July. According to the casualty figures from, the Israeli human rights organization, B'Tselem, and some of the press reports, since Hamas-led Palestinian Authority took office in March 2006 through November 2006, this month, 491 Palestinians are already killed by Israel.
That's small?
I'm sorry?
That's tiny. I mean, we've got 3,000 Iraqi civilians dying every month.
If you think that's tiny, let's compare. 491 Palestinians were killed by Israelis, while 19 Israelis killed by Palestinians.
In the fourth largest Syrian city of Hama, the Syrian government wiped out the entire city that was fighting it and murdered 20,000 people.
Israeli violence. We're talking about...
No, but I don't understand this. Here's what I don't understand. I never see in the press mention of the incredible massacres that the Algerian government has done. Or even, frankly, if you want to talk about Palestinians, the Jordanian government massacred... The Palestinians tried to overthrow the Jordanian government
talk about East Timor's massacre as well, but right now we are talking about Israeli-Palestinian conflict. We are talking
it seems awfully small, doesn't it?
Palestinians being killed for every Israeli since July...
Okay, those Palestinians that were killed, how many of them had actually killed Israeli civilians or were themselves planting bombs or were members of Hamas or were otherwise planning to attack Israel? Because, it seems to me that if someone's trying to attack you and you kill them, I don't have much sympathy for killing murderers.
I know, because whoever Israel says is a murderer is a murderer. Since July 1, that showed up 26 civilians, Palestinian civilians being killed, has now increased to 76 Palestinians killed per Israeli.
Well, let me give you an option.
One Palestinian killed versus just six Israelis.
Let me give you a proposal, okay? The Palestinians could take a lesson from the playbook of Martin Luther King or Gandhi. Here's the idea. Stop strapping bombs on their children. Stop sending, kids with suicide belts into Israeli territory to blow up Passover Seders, and do marches. Do non-violent marches. Renounce violence. Say, you know what, we're going to win through moral authority. We're going to condemn any Palestinian who intentionally murders an Israeli civilian, and we're going to win through moral authority. We're going to do marches. We're going to renounce suicide belts. We don't think it's a good idea to we're going to stop putting bombs into ambulances, for example.
All right.
We're going to stop putting bombs on children and try through nonviolence. Because I'll tell you something. It's not just Prime Minister Olmert. He represents a democratic nation. Israelis have been waiting for 60 years to have someone nonviolent to negotiate with, someone who put down the weapons and said, let's talk. And it just isn't happening.
Let's look at the Palestinian nonviolent struggles, okay? You probably don't know that there has been some struggles. Let's look at them. Let's talk about them. You just probably forgot to mention that Hamas had largely been maintained a ceasefire, no terrorist acts for past 16 months. It doesn't matter. But
they didn't stop.
What do you mean they didn't stop?
They didn't stop. There were Palestinian attacks throughout those 16 months.
Not one terrorist act. But that's just ignored.
You're saying not by Hamas, but by other Palestinian groups.
Well, we are talking about a government which is in power.
But did the government prosecute other Palestinians who did the attacks? They didn't.
But how do you hold responsible for those attacks to the government?
You have a trial, you have an indictment, you find out who did it, we know who did it, Islamic Jihad, there were a number of groups. Hamas didn't put them in prison.
Well, it's not
didn't indict them.
Well, it's not that the Palestinians have not been involved in any peaceful struggle. It's just that either they are ignored or are brutally crushed. Let's take one of the recent examples. One of the many recent examples is when Hamas entered a truce in 2005 and didn't fire a single rocket from Gaza for 16 months. There it was, 16 months opportunity. Israel didn't, you know, even just kind of ignored it.
Well, you say they ignored it, but Hamas refused to recognize Israel's right to exist during all that time and never has. And, in fact, any time a European says, well, I think Hamas is actually implicitly recognizing that Israel has a right to exist, they've said, no, we need a ceasefire, we need more weapons from Egypt, we need to come in and be stronger to indeed wipe Israel off the map. I mean, don't you think that a Palestinian government, and there have been some in the past, Abu Mazen, for example, has, and Israel negotiated with him, but how can Israel negotiate with a government that is dedicated to its destruction? That's the question that I can't seem to get an answer from.
Well, I just tried to answer it, but I don't know what else to say, because we can go on run in circles about what Hamas was trying to say.
Do you agree that they're wrong? Would you argue that Hamas should come out clearly, unequivocally, and say, we recognize that Israel has a right to exist, at least within the 1967 boundaries, that we have no problem, there's a Jewish state in the region, we also think there should be an Arab state in the region, and we should sit down and talk. Would you support Hamas making a clear, unequivocal statement to that effect?
Or would you say they shouldn't say that? I'm not sure how a person whose neck is under a boot of Israeli occupation can say all those things all of a sudden. But
is it that hard to say that I think you should have a right to exist and not be killed? Is it that hard to say?
Okay,
really?
Is it that hard to say for U.S. and Israel to actually recognize Palestinian nationalism and
they have
renounce violence and overwhelming violence, actually, in the case of the U.S. and Israel?
Well, they have. Repeatedly, Israel has offered. They left Gaza completely. They've offered to give more than 90% of the West Bank. You can argue whether it's 92 or 94 or 97. They've recognized a Palestinian state, both the United States and Israel. I'd like to see something from the other side. If you'll hang on, Mr. Singh, I do want to see if anyone else wants to join this discussion. We'll take a quick break. The toll-free number is 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. We'll be right back after this.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, you've reached the job. Johnson's. We're not available to take your call. If you're calling about the apartment for rent, please leave your name and number after the beep, and someone will get back to you.
Hi, my name is Sanjay Rana. I would like to make an appointment to see the apartment.
Oh, hi, this is Robin DiPaola, and I'm calling about the apartment. Please give me a call back at 2.
Hi, hello. This is Rafael Baez. Please call me back at 718.
This is Jeannie Chu. I'd like to talk to you about the apartment. If you can, please call me back.
Hello, my name's Clayton Anderson. I'm calling about the ad in the Sunday paper.
Oh, hello. This is Mrs. Johnson. You must be calling about the apartment.
I am. Is it still available?
Well, you're the first person to call about it. Are you available?
Housing discrimination of all kinds is illegal in the U.S. If you think you've been a victim because of your race, color, national origin, sex, religion, disability, or family status, call 800-669-9777 or visit fairhousinglaw.org. Fair housing. It's not an option. It's the law. Brought to you by HUD, the Ad Council, and LCCREF.
From Washington, more of the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
In Israel, of course, is at an impasse. It's always at an impasse. The duly elected Palestinian government of Hamas has argued that Israel has no right to exist. The entire state should be destroyed. Occasionally, they will do a ceasefire, which they call a hudna, in order to rearm and recreate what they need to destroy the state of Israel. Israel has offered a contiguous Palestinian state in Gaza and the West Bank. They've offered to sit down and negotiate with it. They simply want the Hamas government to say, hey, you have a right to exist as well. Hamas refuses. The Palestinians suffer. That's how I see it. My guest, Joe Singh, disagrees with me. And go ahead, Joe. Tell me why.
My name is Sarabjit. That's just my internet name.
Okay, fair enough. And then I have a caller on the line that I want to hear from, too. So,
all right.
Tell you what, let's go to the caller and hear. Ty, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm good.
Great show, and I wish this would happen more often. I'm calling from Nashville, and I'm calling because I think the topic was Israel and the left, and I don't know where your guest's political perspective is, but I'm from the left, and typically speaking, if you're on the left, you will believe with the rest of the folks on the left that Israel is basically the sole source of evil in the Middle East, and that's pretty common. So I guess what I wanted to maybe ask your guest or just sort of throw out there is something that really bothers me, and it's not just about criticism of Israel, but the left, say the anti-war left, for example, seems really to have embraced Hezbollah and Hamas as sort of liberation struggles, and this really bothers me. I don't understand how folks who are supposedly leftists can embrace, say, Hezbollah, which is supported by Iran, which is an Islamic theocracy, and has an Islamic vision for the region. And secondly, I don't think people on the left are really that familiar with where some of these groups come from. A lot of them, of course, sprang from the Muslim Brotherhood, this isn't rhetoric, this is history, was in fact Nazi-sponsored and worked very closely with the Nazis from before the founding of the State of Israel. As I know you know, the Grand Mufti of Israel, not of Israel, of Jerusalem, before
Jerusalem.
The Western Israel, went to Germany, worked side by side with Hitler, was, some say influenced by Hitler, but some might say Hitler was influenced by him. In other words, he embraced the whole anti-Semitic vision.
Tell you what, Ty, let me address your question to Mr. Singh here. Mr. Singh, do you support Hamas and Hezbollah? You said you don't think Hamas, well, you're not clear on whether you think Hamas is a terrorist organization or not. Do you think that the left should condemn Hamas and Hezbollah for their sexism, and the history that Ty talks about?
Well, I always, I never said that Hamas is not a terrorist organization. That's not what I said. Of course, Hamas has been involved in acts of terrorism. But the problem with the word terrorism is a little more complex. Now, the terrorism term, which has been used quite extensively in public discussions in the U.S. lately, but in my opinion, it's been used in a very sloppy and loose fashion. Now, especially after the tragedy of 9/11, I think it's extremely important for us to talk about what defines terrorism.
No, the first picture which pops up in our minds is some crazy fanatic who is trying to kill people. But I think we should try to distinguish it from aggression and legitimate resistance. You know,
let me ask you this. Do you think it's legitimate to intentionally kill civilians? Because to me, that's my definition of terrorism. If you accidentally kill civilians while going for a military target, I don't call that terrorism. I call that regrettable and something that should be tried to be prevented. If you intentionally try to kill civilians, I call that terrorism. I want to know both from Ty and from Mr. Singh if you agree with that definition. Mr. Singh, you go first.
I would like to what's the official definition of terrorism of the U.S. you know, Army manual. I have this in front of me right now. If you want, I can read it through. It says the terrorism is defined as the calculated use of violence or threat of violence to attain goals that are political, religious, or ideological in nature through intimidation, coercion, or instilling fear, typically targeting civilians.
Support that definition, Mr. Singh?
I think it's quite a reasonable definition. And
I accept it too.
And we should now apply this definition to actions of a state along with the actions of individuals. I mean, when states are involved in terrorism, we don't really seem to detect it very easily. You know, due to various reasons, we can talk about those reasons why we find it so hard to detect when the state is involved in a terrorism, you know, because of nationalism and all the propaganda, even though they have a much more devastating impact in terms of
Mr. Singh, just so you know, my listeners know, I mean, I, for example, opposed the war in Iraq from the get-go. I always thought that was a wrong decision. But, you know, to me, the definition of terrorism, the one you just read, is intentionally targeting civilians or committing acts of violence to achieve a political purpose. And I think
it doesn't say the official definition doesn't say intentional or not intentional. It says a calculated use of violence or threat
calculated.
Of violence to attain political, religious, ideological goals. Okay? Now, these acts of state terrorism are just dismissed using terms like collateral damage and soft targets.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Singh. Can self-defense be terrorism? I mean, we were attacked on September 11th by an al-Qaeda group out of Afghanistan. We went back and attacked Afghanistan. Was that a terrorist act for us to attack Afghanistan after al-Qaeda attacked us? Or was that self-defense? I think it was self-defense, personally, but I want to hear what you have to think.
No, I would like to know if by attacking Afghanistan population, by killing thousands of people there, I don't understand what purpose does it really serve. I mean,
we were attacking al-Qaeda camps.
Terrorism, if you want to know how should we deal with terrorism, we can talk about that.
Well, no, but let's just back up. Do you think it was fair of the United States to respond to 9/11 by attacking al-Qaeda camps in Afghanistan?
Yes, if you are talking being specific, attacking and bombing al-Qaeda camps, of course it was valid. But
was it fair to go further and send U.S. troops into Afghanistan to basically topple the Taliban government, which was supporting al-Qaeda? Was that fair?
It was supporting, yes, but we have to go back and look at the record, what was happening. After 9/11, the United States asked the government of Afghanistan to hand over these criminals. Is that right?
I'll tell you, we're running out of time. We're not going to be able to resolve all these issues here. Ty, you got 15 seconds, and then I got
to
close up.
That is the reason
I would like
wanted
to
stay on
the
issue.
I'm sorry,
you're
still talking. I would like to do two things, okay? One, I would like to see them to make some distinctions. We can talk about Blair and England, but somehow we don't make distinctions about the government of Israel. The government right now is fairly right-wing in Israel. They came from the Likud party. That's the right side of the political spectrum. Let's make some distinctions. And secondly, please, those on the left, let us not embrace Hezbollah and Hamas and these groups which have a history that is based in an anti-Semitic, violent philosophy that really has no place on the table at all in this discussion. I can't solve the problems of the Middle East, but that's what I'd like to see the left do, is start to make some of these important distinctions.
Thank you for your call, Ty. I appreciate it. I'd like to see people feel free to criticize the Israeli government. Israelis do it all the time. But I think that we have to recognize, if you will, the right of Israel to exist. I support a Palestinian state. I have for a long time. The question is where the borders should be, and I think that as long as people are saying you have no right to exist, there's no hope for peace in the Middle East. Mr. Singh, you got 30 seconds. I'll give you the last word.
Well, I always say if you just well, Hamas is saying Israel doesn't have a right to exist. Well, what about the rest of the Palestinian representatives for past 30 years? You know, there have been number of representatives from PLO to whatnot. What about them? They were recognizing Israel. Well, but the occupation persists. It just continues. So these are just excuses. It's a rhetoric. I don't think it has any meaning. The only the Israel's policy is to annex some more territory and continue with occupation and drive the population to desperation so that they probably leave or die. I don't know.
Except, of course, no matter how many times you said it, Israel has ceased to occupy the land. They left Gaza, they left most of the West Bank, and they left all Palestinian populated areas. 98% of Palestinian populated areas Israel left completely until they were attacked yet again. So the conversation goes on. I want to thank you, Mr. Singh, for coming on here. We'll have to do this issue again sometime. Feel free to come on the blog, folks, at RadioInsideScoop.com. This is Mark Levine signing off.
Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there. Here we are again. The Guy James Show. Part of the Head On Radio Network, coming to you from the beautiful blue waters and sandy beaches of Southwest Florida. Glad to have all of you along with us today. We're going to try and have an interesting show for you today. I know we're going to have an interesting show for you today. Lots on tap. Coming up at the bottom of the hour, we're going to have Michael Shea, who wrote, produced, and directed the movie Red State. And we'll be playing some excerpts from that. Not the video excerpts, because it won't do you any good. but anyway, we'll be playing some audio from that. And you'll say, well, you'll think it's really great. Interesting. Very interesting. We are going to have something we haven't had in a while today. Not in a long while. We, as I explained to some folks on the chat room, and hello to everybody over in the Hit On Radio Network chat room. As I explained to them the other day, I was talking on the air about the right-wingers, radical religious right-wingers, and lo and behold, somebody listened in and must have alerted all their friends and neighbors, the wackos, and we got a flood of email from them. So we're going to be having that. You talk about hate mail. These people know how to write hate mail. And we'll be having that coming up, a segment of Republican Love, a few minutes of Republican Love, coming up a little later on in the program. Looking forward to that. And what else we got on tap here today? Well, I don't know. Hey, just to clear something up, I wasn't clear on what I said yesterday. I think we had a real good caller yesterday. Asked the question, can Bush be impeached for being incompetent? I say yes. Didn't fully answer that. Yes, because lying is a misdemeanor, and I think incompetence is what drove him to lie to us. He got back in the corner, didn't know how to get out of it, and then he lied again over this foolish lie. He showed us his willingness to lie over this Rumsfeld thing. A week before, he said he wasn't going to fire him, and then when he explained that he did have him step down, he didn't want to. You know, that's why he said what he said. He admitted that he lied anyway. He's a pathological liar. He lies every single day, all that he can, and I think we know that. So, yes, I think he can be impeached for that. He's like I said, he's had to lie to cover up his monumental incompetence. And in a way, I don't blame him for some of those lies. After all, would you want the whole world to know that you went to war without having a plan for the war, for after the war? I don't think so. Not having a plan for after the war is gross negligence. Or incompetence, no matter how you look at it. Robbing a bank is a high crime, but running a telephone pole into a telephone pole with your car on a sunny day with no traffic is probably a misdemeanor. And it says high crimes and misdemeanors. So we shall see. We shall see. Like I said, a lot coming up on the program today. One thing I wanted to ask, and something has been very, very quiet, very quiet. Whatever happened to the Foley investigation? Didn't they promise us a quick decision on it? Not that I give a damn what happens to Mark Foley, but, you know, now that the election is over, are they thinking that we don't care about that anymore? Do they think for a moment that we don't care if Hastert and other key Republicans knew all about Foley and kept quiet about it for political reasons? I do care about that. I want to know, and I want you to know. I know you.